Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm the managing editor of Reader Views in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And welcome to episode 54 in our series. Tonight's topic is Writing and Publishing Nonfiction. And our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Robert D. Reed. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Please send your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Now tonight we're on the line with Bob Reed, the publisher of nearly 1,800 books and co-author of more than 50 books and resource guides on a wide range of subjects, including environmental issues, current affairs, health, business excellence, responsible leadership, helping women get elected to political office, creating high-quality education, effective parenting, psychology, domestic violence and child abuse, homelessness, human and animal rights, healing racism, and peaceful activism. Profits from one of his cookbooks fed millions of children worldwide through the CARE organization in New York City. Many of his authors have been featured on television and radio, newspaper and magazine articles around the world. The founder of Robert D. Reed Publishers, Bob has produced and distributed over 165 titles, including House Calls, How We Can All Save the World One Visit at a Time by Patch Adams, M.D. Yes, that's the same book that the film with Robin Williams was filmed. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Victor and Irene. It's nice to be with you tonight.
Well, it's great to have you, too, and I just want to talk to you a little about, you published nearly 1,800 books and co-authored more than 50 and produced and distributed over 165. That's a lot of books. Now, I understand you've been in this business for quite some time.
Yes, 42 years, and I have the scars to prove it.
That's a long time to stay in one business, that's for sure, and so we value your expertise. And
thank you.
You are a traditional publisher, not a subsidy press.
Correct.
That's good. We need to clear that up because that's certainly a lot of books, and quite often when people look at what you're considered to be a medium or a small press, then they start questioning whether it's subsidy or not, and I just needed to get that clear.
Oh, sure. We have, first of all, the majority of their books were published by our R&E Publishers or R&E Research Associates or Century 21 Publishing, companies I owned, 15 years ago and sold. And now Robert D. Reed Publishers has in print now a little over 200 titles.
Right.
And we haven't updated our website yet, but, with the number of titles, the books are on there, but not the number of titles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's growing at about 25 titles per year.
That's great. Well, we want to talk today about writing and publishing nonfiction, and one of the first things I wanted to ask you, Robert, is explain to us the importance of having facts, the truth, and how important it is when you're writing memoirs or anything to do with nonfiction writing that the facts have to be important. And I want you to just explain how the importance of that.
Well, we have to rely strictly on the author's honesty when we get a nonfiction book, and even Oprah gets stumped. So we have to rely on that. We don't do fact checking and everything on the title, so it's sort of a trust thing. I think it's very important for an author to be honest in their writing because they're going to be probably questioned by it later on by somebody. So that'd be a terrible thing to be on the air and then have a host question something was in the book that maybe they did some research on and found out wasn't factual. So it's a real dangerous pit that an author could get into by not stating the truth.
And then, there's the importance of the facts and the research, because a lot of nonfiction books, there has to be a lot of base research done. And do you have any suggestions on how a person could start or how they could find, the facts for whatever they're writing for?
Well, of course, these days it's much easier when you're using a computer to ask a question, to go to Jeeves or Ask.com or Google and type in a question and do your research. I mean, you might find various numbers, but at least you can find somehow by going through census data or through some government agencies or something and trying to find out, you know, as close as you can, the numbers you're working with or the facts you're stating. There's so many online sources today to get this information. I think it would be very difficult not to find the truth or the factual numbers or whatever you're writing about. So I think it's easier today than it ever was.
Well, it's certainly so true with the Internet and all the information that is on that highway. It certainly is much easier to get the facts correct. And you had mentioned Google, and that just came to mind about I've been told many times over and over that the importance of the title of a nonfiction book, the importance of it is that it should be, you know, available for Google to, whenever you put any type of words into Google, that the title of the book will come up. And I just wanted you to talk about that and the importance of it, or if you really feel that that is important.
Well, it's easy sometimes and tricky for people to come up with exactly the right title for their book. And the more esoteric the title is, the more difficult it will be for anyone to ever find it on Google or Amazon or anything. I mean, if they don't have the title of the book and they're looking for a subject like, you know, divorced parents or something like that, I mean, if that's the title of the book, divorced parents, that's going to be the most upfront title that you could come up with, and you know, and do a search on Google or Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, pardon me, or any database that even comes close to that title, something's going to come up about that book if you've done your done your posting properly. So, the more esoteric the title for a nonfiction book, the more difficult it will be for the consumer to find that book, because you're dealing with billions of pages on the Internet today. There are literally more pages on the Internet than people on Earth. So if you don't have anything close to the title, I mean, the correct words in your title that are going to, you know, aid in the search for your title, it may be buried forever.
And that's so true. And I would suppose that having a good subtitle to cover all the search words is also not an option.
That's correct. It's, you know, first write, you know, we always write down all the number of words that have to do with that title, and then we come up with, you know, as many words as we can to put into the title or the subtitle that make it very understandable for people, so they don't have to second guess what the book's about. So that's some homework that needs to be done before you even register a book or come up with the title. You need to really think about it, and then, you know, I get about several hundred manuscripts a year from people or offers of manuscripts, and I often go on Amazon and I actually find the title that the person's proposing to us, you know, that somebody else has published, and sometimes I find 10 or 12 of the same title. So, you know, people could do some research before they even cement their title into their book, you know, as they go at least go on Amazon and look for the title. You know, it's terrible to come out with a book and you know, have it be the 12th in line with the same two-word title.
That is so true, and
that's
important.
All right, Bob, given that you do a lot of nonfiction titles, do you have a standard formula for pre-publication publicity, or how does that work?
Yes, Victor. What we do first is send advanced galley copies out to the, you know, the standard list, you know, and Irene's helped with that a number of times for us, and you know, Library Journal, Booklist, Choice, many, you know, the New York Times Book Review, USA Today, Chicago Trib, that type, trying to solicit a review for a title approximately 4 months and not sooner than the actual publication date of the book. So what we're doing now is we're printing the books approximately 3.5 to 4 months prior to its actual publication date, and then we're sending review copies out to those media and also encouraging the author to work on their own personal media blitz, if you will, you know, like local hometown papers, things like that, and then we send books out to the major review media, magazines and newspapers, I think in plenty of time, you know. I'd say 4 months before publication, then can start doing mailings of postcards, full color cover, pictures on a postcard to libraries and bookstores. If you have sales reps like we do, we send sales reps a sell sheet and things to use in their presentation to Barnes & Noble and Borders to encourage them to stock the book. And then we do mailings of these sell sheets with the review copies to the major reviewers.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty thorough coverage there.
Well, it is. I mean, we could maybe talk for a minute about some of the gurus and in publishing that write newsletters and so on. I've heard send 400 copies of your book out for review and all of that. I've been doing this for 42 years, and I don't know if I could cover the postage with that many review copies going out. And maybe only getting 10, 12, or 15 reviews, and often in very obscure publications or review sources, it really don't mean much as far as book sales are concerned, Not to mention any, because I may not ever get reviewed there again. But a great review is in Booklist, for example, or Publishers Weekly, or Library Journal, New York Times, those are the great big Publishers Weekly would be a real good one for the bookstores. And when you get a review in them, you can sort of guarantee that you're going to get a real good pre-order of the book, maybe 1,000, 2,000 copies from the library market or something if it gets a star review. But sending 400 copies out to just all kinds of obscure newspapers and magazines, I just think it's... For me, it would be pouring money into a well. I just don't think it would be very productive.
Right. So probably maybe a galley run of 50 copies would be the right number?
At the max, yeah, I think. Unless, for example, let's say it was I like to get things down real tight. Let's say you did a book on beekeeping.
Yeah.
So it's not a book on, making fast money, So there's a lot of publications you can send that out to. But let's just say for beekeeping, let's say that there are 50 organizations in the world, and 50 inclusive of 50 magazines, newsletters, websites, and advisors and consultants in the beekeeping business. Then it would be wise to send that 50 people a list of the book, because they're... there may be 20,000 beekeepers in the world, or 30, or whatever it is. I mean, those 50 people would have a lot of influence on that on that marketplace. But I mean, sending it to USA Today, like the secrets of beekeeping for today's farmer, or something like that, isn't going to wind up being in USA Today or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or anything. So. The closer you have of a list that matches the subject that you're publishing in, the better chance you have of getting reviewed. And I would say then 50 copies of a review on beekeeping would be just perfect.
Right, that makes sense, exactly. Yeah. Now, do you use the white cover galleys, or do you use the color covers with advanced reading copy burned into it?
In the past, we've made copies of... Like you're discussing. Now we're printing the books 3 to 4 months in advance, and we're sending out completed, finished books.
Really?
As advanced, yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now the big mystery question is, how do you size that initial print run so that you don't, have 5 years' worth of inventory?
Yeah. Well, many of my new authors... For the titles that we're working on now that are coming out in the next 3 or 4 months, 5 months, and are in the business of their book. And I'm spending a lot of time working with authors who are in the business of their book, who give workshops, seminars, who are already known, who have an agenda, a platform, so to speak, that people actually come to them and listen to them, and then buy books right in the back of the room. So a lot of my time is spent working with authors like that, and so we determine that number based on projected, 6 month sales. It might run into the 3 to 10,000 range. You can always go back to press, with a phone call and a check. But You know, printing too many in the beginning can be very dangerous, especially for a small company. So, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 is a good number to seed the marketplace.
Right. There's the old aphorism that all the money that you make is lost on the last print run.
You know, I could tell you a few of those. Yeah, I've one time Target decided to take Patch Adams' house calls for every store. That had 550 stores. So they ordered 10 copies for every store. So I was told to sell these books to something like 8 wholesalers. And they gave me the name of the wholesalers, and I had to contact the wholesalers and make arrangements with them. So, you know, I'd send 1,200 here, 2,100 here, 600 there. So I'm sending books all over the country. Of course, I have to supply I have to pay the freight. It's not in the deal. They want the books at the lowest price, and then so anyway, I had 5,500 more copies printed, and I sent them from the factory, you know, to these different locations in various quantities. So I think there were 7 locations, and they held the books for 3 months, and I got something like 70% of the books back.
Wow.
From these wholesalers, unopened, incidentally, unopened.
Right.
You know, the tape was never removed from the factory carton. Which means that the 10 books never got really distributed in the 550 Target stores. Only some of them did.
Right.
And this is a danger of this business. You know, you're dealing with these people that you have no control over that. You know, Target wanted the books. They gave instructions. I shipped the books. I paid for the books, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $1,700 for freight or whatever it was. And then approximately 70% of the books came back, and the reason they came back because they were never even opened and distributed in the first place. So you have a big danger when you're dealing with large retailers.
Right. I hear numbers bandied around like 30% return is the industry average rate. Does that jive with your market?
You're talking to a guy that had $14,000 in returns this month.
Hey.
So it's not usually that high. I mean, I think we average somewhere in the 12% range, you know. But for some reason, we had a large print run of one book, and it got out there with a lot of fanfare. And then the sales of that book are slower than what Barnes & Noble, Borders, and Amazon, and Baker & Taylor, and Ingram want to hold on to for more than 3 months so they don't have to pay for them. So as soon as a certain time period goes up, the distributor all of a sudden feels, oh, this bill's going to be due for this, you know, this 1,400 books at, you know, at $15 a piece, you know, which
right.
is, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 bucks. They'll return them and reorder them 2 weeks later rather than having to pay for them.
Yeah.
So this is a danger.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a successful book, you have to put them out all over the place, and you're taking the chance if you don't have enough publicity going and the author isn't interviewed enough in that 90-day period, there's a very, very good chance that you would have the book returned prematurely so Amazon and all these people don't have to pay for them.
That's a very good point, yeah, sir.
I've been trapped in it many times. That's why I said I have the scars to prove it. Now, you think you're going to, you know, have all this publicity and everything, and if things change for you, I mean, we'll probably get the publicity over the next year, but we didn't have it in that first 90-day period, and maybe 120 days on some cases. But the other danger was, you know, I put 5,000 hardcover books out into the marketplace, into distributors and wholesalers. Then we were out of books, and the rep says, we better get more books quickly. You know, so I printed 10,000 more for tens of thousands of dollars, and I got enough returns in this last 30 days that I didn't have to make another printing. So,
mm-hmm.
yet, you know. So this is where you're at, you know. It's a game when you start playing into the wholesalers and retailers, you know, Borders, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and all that. You're in a game of a lot of waste. So,
yeah.
Like you said, the last printing is the profit you would have made on the book if you hadn't reprinted it.
That's a real eye-opener.
It is. It's a danger, a real danger in the business, you know.
Right.
And we'll be back with more Authors Access after these important announcements.
author looking for another way to make your book available to your reading audience? If so, how about entering the revolutionary world of ebooks for Amazon Kindle? Amazon recently launched their new ebook reader that is now sweeping the masses by providing not only the ebook reader limitless possibilities, but it also now provides the opportunity for all authors to have their book available in the ebook format. The Kindle is the newest book reading device to hit the market. Let ReaderViews help you get your book on Amazon in just a few easy steps. You provide us the information and we'll upload it for you. At the same time, we will optimize your ebook by ensuring that your book is compatible and looks great on the new Kindle Reader. For more information, please go to ReaderViews.com and click on the Services for Authors in the top menu bar. There you will see the services we provide, as well as the link for your Kindle ebook production. The success of your book is our greatest interest. Go to ReaderViews.com today.
You've been around for a while, so you might not be able to answer this, but how do you begin opening a relationship with some of the chain stores if you're just starting up?
As a small publisher?
Yeah.
Or as an individual?
Well, we could answer it either way.
They often just have stock answers they give you. You know, you have to do this, that, and the other. We don't work with... A lot of the wholesalers won't work with an individual or a small publishing company with only, under, say, 10 or 20 titles. They want to work with people who have multiple titles. And so you may have to pay fees sometimes to actually get distributed. So you have to be careful of that. Let me just say this. The best way for any person or small publishing company to sell books is directly to the end consumer or to organizations or in bulk sales to agencies who actually deal in that subject. Like I said, beekeeping or something. You know, to sell vast quantities quickly and without getting into the bookstore trade and the Amazon.com trade and all of that, the best way to sell a book, the closest to direct to the consumer you are, the more guarantee that you'll make some money from your book.
Right. The so-called non-bookstore sales, I believe, account for something like 40% of the industry now.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I mean, I've made some really big sales to, 10,000s, 3,000 to airlines, and the military just bought 2,100 copies of one book. You know, it's about long-distance parenting, military people overseas and everything. And then leadership books to major corporations, sales books to, Frito-Lay, Pepsi-Cola, things like that. So the closer you are to the consumer of your book, the better chance you have of making a go of it. The worst place to sell a book in the world is through a bookstore.
Amen to that.
Okay, I'm glad you believe that, because one month you'll sell 500 copies of a book, and sometime in the future you may get 392 of them back, 15 of them with banged up covers, some of them with torn inside, some of them with chewing gum in them. You're responsible for every book that's out there because they're all in consignment. So, you're not going to get paid on books that get returned, and sometimes the returns are shocking. They could be, like I said on this one book, I had $8,000 on one book this month returned and $4,000 on another book. That's on just two titles out of 190 or 200 titles what I have in print now. So they were the two biggest ones, but I'm just saying this is what happens. So that's income that you thought was coming in that isn't coming in. So, and the way the wholesalers and distributors work, we have sales reps all over the country and, large distributors. If they made a sale of a book in January and they got to pay you in May for that book that they sold in January and they're due to pay you May the 1st,
yeah.
If they get a return on the 29th of April, they will take the return at that very moment before you get your check. So you could be accumulating $10,000 of returns when you think you're getting a $20,000 check. May the 1st, you may have $10,000 in returns that they've accumulated since till the end of April, and they're going to deduct that immediately off what they owe you.
Well, that's a shocker.
Don't you experience that in your business?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not on the scale where you're at, but, you know, I do.
Well, I'm not on maybe, but anyway, that's what happens. So, I mean, it's you have to beware. I mean, you have to be real solvent. You know, we have no debt in our business. Everything's paid for. Everything's up to date. And you know, we don't owe any building rents or inventory rents or anything like that. So, I mean, everything's free and clear. So we can weather all this stuff. There were times when, you know, my toes were curled, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Bob, you had mentioned earlier that the authors should have a platform. And I think that many authors, writers, expect the publishers to do a lot of the publicity and marketing. And you had mentioned the importance of the platform. And I just would like to have you talk a little bit about what it is that you expect your authors to have in the platform and how much time and marketing that they need to spend themselves in promoting their book.
Well, I believe that most smaller publishers, and when I say small, I even mean with 100, 200 titles, they've got a certain amount of staff or a certain budget to publish and distribute books, warehouse them, do the ad copy, do the websites, manage everything, you know, edit, cover design and everything. And they're not going to have the budget that most authors think that they may have, you know, to spend, $3,000 a month for 6 months for a publicist to work on their book, generally. Now, there are publishers that are doing real well. I mean, if you had one book like The Secret, you could fund 100 other books. I mean, you could hire 10 publicists. You can, have them all on the telephone, writing copy, doing things. I mean, that's great. But if you're doing it alone, I mean, as a small one- or two-person publishing company, and you put, say, $50,000 or $100,000 out over a period of a year to print and, you know, pay your rent and pay little salaries and this and that, you're not going to have several thousand dollars a month for publicity for any one of your titles. So you're going to do certain things like we do. We catalog them. We put them up on the web. We get them registered everywhere. We furnish sales reps materials to use, I mean, like sell sheets and that, sample copies, review copies. But we don't have somebody on the telephone 8 hours a day calling writers all over the country that write for magazines and newspapers and bookstores soliciting our authors or the book for sale or for an article or a feature or anything like that on a regular basis, because it's way too expensive. First of all, most of the people that you call don't answer the phone.
Yeah.
I've had people leave 10, 12 messages, you know, on shows and never, ever get a call back. And so when we do have somebody that's interested in doing a show, we've had big ones, you know, Oprah and all that. But, I mean, we jump up on top of the desk and do everything we can to keep that moving. But we don't have, you know, most small companies can't spend several thousand dollars a month per title to keep publicity going. So an author needs to understand this before they ever write the book, that what am I going to be able to do, what is my commitment as an author before I even have this book published for a constant promotion, speaking, book signing, and marketing. It's something that people should really think of long before they ever write the book. Where am I going to find the time? Who's going to help me? Where am I going to get the lists? Am I equipped to do this? Do I like to do it? I mean, am I a good public speaker? If you can't answer those questions like, yes, I really love this and I want to get out there, I'm going to fill the trunk full of books, I'm going to drive across the country like Jack Canfield, and I'm going to sell every little town and get on every radio station and in small towns and do book signings and get it written up in the newspaper and all that. Most authors don't have that chutzpah to do that. So I think an author or a small publishing company, before they start in the business, need to really feel strong about commitment and the amount of energy they can pour into a project before they even...
You know, that's such a good point. I'm glad that you mentioned that and mentioned the fact that these people really need to think about this before they write the book. Many writers write the book and then they think about marketing and realize that they're not public speakers. No, they can't do this. No, they don't have the money. And so I'm glad you mentioned that. I want
I put this down, before you called. I mean, about, you know, think marketing and think of where you're going to mm-hmm. sell your manuscript and book before you even write it. Why spend 2 years writing a book if no one even wants to look at your four-page proposal? If they won't read four pages, what makes you think they will invest 20 hours to read your 5-pound manuscript? I mean, it's the truth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can get people interested in your proposal and you get a deal, then go ahead and write the book. But why invest a couple of years? I mean, wouldn't it be better to find 5 books that you really like and buy them? Let's say you're a public speaker and there are 5 books that sort of support your venue.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just instead of spending the 2 years writing a book or whatever? I mean, some people write a book in 3-4 months, but I mean, why not take 5 books that you're really sold on and you're giving your speeches on that subject? Let's call it leadership. And why not have 5 books and tapes at the back of the room of the books that really profess what you're teaching people? And buy those wholesale for 60% off or 70 in quantity and sell those books and make your money charging people to get into the room.
Yeah, that's a real good point.
Everybody seems today they have to have a book to be somebody.
Well, there's the stigma that comes with being a published author or, you know, the book has been published.
Well, I know, but yes.
I agree. I just want to switch a little here. And it seems that in the nonfiction, the self-help is such a catch-all. And then on the other hand, it's, oh, no, not another self-help book. So why is this, you know, oh, no, not another self-help book? What is going on? And yet there seems to be more and more self-help books coming out, and none of them are saying anything new. It's just a repetition that's already been said. So I would like you to make your comments on that fact.
That is true, that there's nothing new under the sun. But the presentation of what people do, I mean, if you look at some of Tom Hughes' new books that he's done, and I don't have the titles. Everybody knows Tom Pugino, and look at some of the new books and the presentation in those and everything. Just terrific. I mean, even though the material's been used before and, you know, he's even had them in other books of his, I mean, the presentation and how people can visually see everything and the color and the reverses that are done in the books, I mean, I think the books are a lot better today than they ever were. I mean, the technology of producing books, the typesetting and the cover designs, the layouts and the printing processes are all much better than they were, when I started in the business in the mid-1960s. I mean, I started in publishing when the guy doing some of my work had a Linotype machine next to him. And most of the people that are going to be listening to this don't even know what a Linotype machine is. I've watched it start from there and move on. But I mean, self-help is it's something that people can sell their seminar on. I mean, I've got people coming out with all kinds of great seminars and, you know, in the self-help books I'm publishing right now. And so it's often customized to their speech, you know. So if people have an agenda or a venue, you know, and they publish another self-help book to go along with it, then, you know, that's the way they want to demonstrate the subject.
And there
that's
again, that's going back to their platform, as you had spoken earlier.
Say again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
And this, what you had just said, reverts back to them having the platform and
right.
What the expectations are of the author. And so, you know, there they are. If they do seminars and so on, it's great to have that self-help book. And
yes.
You had also mentioned about presentation and timing, and I just wanted to make the comment about The Secret. You know, the people that are involved in The Secret, as you know, have been around for the last 30 and 40 years saying the same
yes.
thing, but all of a sudden the timing was right on at this time. And it's old material, but it also comes to the timing. And so
exactly. People wanted something new, and it came about, and The production of the job is, I mean, the book, I mean, the product is very well done. I mean, whether it's old material or not, it looks great. The package is beautiful. The cover's interesting, intriguing. The movie, you know, was shown in Unity churches and in groups and clubs all over the country, you know, maybe all over the world, I have no idea. And that generated, you know, people's interest, and then the book came out, and I think it's taken a few years for it to really, you know, 2-3 years. I saw The Secret 3 years ago in Wisconsin in a church in one evening. You know, there were about 60 people in the audience. And it was intriguing. And then I didn't see the book for a year or two. So they started a little campaign, and I think the product looks terrific. It's a great, you know, it's a terrific book to have if you're going to have a book like that. It's certainly a nice-looking book, and it feels good. The graphics are nice. It's interesting. You know, the cover's beautiful. You know, I mean, they've done a wonderful job on it. Great marketing, good timing, a big list of people, you know, big names, people that are into the business of, you know, self-help and everything. It's all timing.
Exactly. Bob, speaking of timing, I'd like to ask you about a couple of, you know, up-and-coming technologies, and you can just give me your horse sense on it. What do you think is the right role for print-on-demand?
I think for a lot of folks who can't answer the questions that I had prepared, you know, like why you're writing a book, you know, who are your readers, what will interest them, when will you have the time to spend 10 or more hours a week writing letters, stuffing envelopes, calling people on the phone, where are you going to find these people, why do you need to write a book? Your fame, notoriety, money justify the purchase of a $5,000 computer system or something? I mean, and how will you pay for it? Find a publisher, find the time to make it successful? I think if you don't answer all of these with a lot of enthusiasm, you should probably print 100 copies of the book and see how it goes with an on-demand company.
Right.
And not spend a publisher's time or your own time and money spending, you know, 2,500 copies of a book and then burning out after 3 months of a lot of rejection. So I think it's on-demand's good. It's also good for companies who, you know, printed, say, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 copies of a book, and then the sales have dropped down to, you know, maybe after a few years or whatever, the sales have dropped down to 25 copies a month or something. And then you say, well, I could still keep the book in print and do an on-demand thing. So it has its place. I don't use it, but I mean, I have used it in the past. I tried it, and it just seems like, you know, printing 300 copies of a book and then needing more and more, it just doesn't work. I mean, the economy of it doesn't work. You have to pay so much per book and everything like that. So it's less expensive for me just to go ahead and make a commitment, print X number of books, and then have them all paid for and in stock and so on. You know, that management of the inventory and everything when you're printing small quantities is not for somebody that's doing the Barnes & Noble Borders and Amazon and corporate sales, things like that. It's for people who, you know, have a family history or have an out-of-print book that they'd like to just, you know, keep alive for a few more years by printing 10 or 50 at a time, you know, so.
Right, yeah, I think Cambridge Press just announced that they now have 10,000 backlist titles available on print-on-demand. I mean, they've been around for 100 years, so.
Oh, sure. 10,000 titles on demand. Yeah, well, I tell you, and another thing, I don't know how these on-demand companies can actually really make any money.
That's amazing.
I mean, could you imagine getting 10,000 orders in 1 week for one copy? I mean, think about
it. Enough.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, I used to have a printing business back in the 60s and 70s, and we even printed our own books for a long period of time, and I don't know how they can keep up with it, even though it's done with xerography and everything. I don't know how they could process and make sure that the binding is right and pack them right and ship them off to people and bill them and do all the credit card stuff for you know, onesies and twosies. I mean, I think it's a virtual nightmare.
Yeah. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit. How about Amazon Kindle and the whole portable e-book reader thing? Do you see a future in that?
Yeah, I do. I I haven't seen that product yet. I have a link to it. It was on somebody's website, and I just haven't had the time to link up. I got it like 3 days ago, so it has a little demonstration video and everything.
Oh.
I love the idea. I mean, I often thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to grab that thing and plug it into a vending machine at an airport?
Yeah.
And download your latest Tom Clancy book or something, you know, right on. Just plug it right in like you were plugging in a cigarette lighter or something, you know. And then just pushing and putting a $10 bill or your credit card into a vending machine of some type and just downloading any book you want, you know. I mean, you could have a million titles in a machine, you know. So I see that as the future. I just think I'll be out of commission by the time that becomes a major business in the United States. It may, you know, take 10, 5, 10, 20 years for people to really, for everybody to have one of those for $200 or $300. You know?
Well, like everything else, the price will probably go down. Remember when the little digital calculators first came out and there were hundreds of dollars, and now they give them away for free or, you know, 99 cents or whatever.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. $100 for a calculator once.
Uh-huh. Me too.
Oh, I have the Marchant March. Yeah, I mean, there used to be $2,500 for calculators when I was in electronic business. I mean, they used to have, the Marchants, you know. Anyway, it's an old story, but it's almost like the Linotype. But, I feel that, it's going to work, but, I mean, it's going to take a long time for people to get used to it and for people to shell out the money to have... it's like an iPod or something. I personally love to have books on my bookshelf, and I love to pick up a book and look at the cover and feel it. I bought several thousand books before on I forgot what it was now. It was 3,000 books on some CD set or something, and I haven't read one of them yet. I mean, it's like I have them, but I mean. I don't even know where the disc is now, but I don't know. I'm just not. I don't like to read a lot on my computer or on something like that. I just at the end of the day, I mean, I want to hold a magazine or a newspaper, or look at a book or television, go to a movie. I don't know. It's not for me right now.
Well, I think a lot of people feel that way too, and yet I think that this is a sign of the times too, and it's certainly going to be something that people will be buying. So, gosh,
sure.
Bob. This has been really, really great to be talking to you and pulling out your expertise of 42 years. Gosh, you've been in the business for a long, long time and certainly have gone through a lot of ebbs and flows and ups and downs and, things that work and things that don't work and waves and trends and so on. So, gosh, thank you so much for sharing what you have.
You're very welcome. It's been nice chatting with both of you. I hope I helped somebody out there, make a decision before they jump into this.
Well, I'm sure you did. And Bob, just remind our audience what your website address is.
Oh, it's rdrpublishers.com, and that stands for Robert D. Reed, but it is actually RDR to make it shorter for people. And my phone number is 888-IDEA-MAN.
All right. So rdrpublishing.com.
Publishers.
Publishers, pardon me. rdrpublishers.com. Great. And,
right.
Thank you again, and
we'll do it again sometime.
Of course.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, that's for sure. I do have some questions on my sheet of paper here that I never did get to ask, so you are going to have
to come
back.
I have a whole script written of things, but I had to do it myself because all my writers are on strike. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Too funny.
So, okay. All right. Well, take care then.
Thank you. You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air January 3rd, 2008, after a well-deserved vacation, when our topic will be writing and publishing Christian-themed books. And our guest who will be joining us is Rebecca Germany. You can learn more about all our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We would love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, saying good night.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Wolfman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.